The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, I should just let John host, is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And Briggs Auction, the official auction of the Ricky at briggsauction.com. Ricky's also brought to you by Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter with Zoe, which I will be drinking all summer long. Subscribe to the newsletter at rightsrickysanchez.com/newsletter. On the show today, Spike, out of town, get out, in, John Gonzalez, of everything you fucking know him from, the Philadelphia royalty over here.
You have no idea where I work now.
Yeah, you do. I CBS. CBS Sports.
You were grasping for it.
it was a moment of realization that I should have written this down. But I know you do. We're going to talk about the Sixers.
For whichever dead legacy media company that I work for now.
My brother, this is the Dead Legacy Media Podcast. We're going to talk about the Sixers. We're going to talk about maybe some other playoffs, maybe some other shit. We'll see. CJ, play the song. This is the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I am Michael Levin. We have with us John Gonzalez. John, Phils are in first place. How you doing?
They are. Am I supposed to keep talking?
I said, how you doing, brother?
Oh, the Phils are in first place. I'm very excited about it. Less excited about, you know, there's a couple of things Phils related that concern me, but they are in first place. So, you know, I'm going to not really focus on those things. And I choose joy.
Yeah, it is difficult to transition for me from Sixers intensity in April, May into the ease and lax nature of a Phillies season. And it does help when they're winning almost every game, I will say.
It's been so nice and so comfortable. And the contrast between, you know, waiting for the inevitable Sixers downfall and disappointment, and then go, like, you and I and some of our friends in LA went down to San Diego to visit our other buddy in San Diego when the Phillies were in town and they won. And then we went out and had cocktails, and it was just like a really nice day. And it is by comparison, a much different experience.
Yeah, I can't imagine having a nice day with the Sixers. Even when they win, it doesn't feel like a nice day. It feels.
I might have mentioned this to you, but at work now, you know, I do this daily podcast for CBS Sports, and one of the three people I podcast with, well, two people, I'm the third, is a Knicks fan, and like all other, she's otherwise a nice person, but like all Knicks fans is entirely insufferable. And dealing with that whole series and then the aftermath has been, it's every day. I'm just like reminded of what a miserable existence that is.
Yeah. When there's that sort of level of like, our teams are playing each other, we work closely together, I need to establish a vibe with that person at work of, I hate my team more than you. We cannot go back and forth and start to like talk shit about each other's teams. I don't want to do that. That is not compelling during the game, as the game is happening, which we would be watching separately. then you could, then I would feel obviously strong feelings about any number of players on the other team. But outside of that, I can't be going back and forth of like just talking shit about, I don't know, Josh Hart or something. It's just not a, it's such an unappealing thing.
I don't talk shit about other teams. That's never been interesting to me. I do, however, talk shit about the teams that I follow.
That's right.
And when you say we can't be going back and forth because I hate my own team more than you could possibly, that is exactly what I was trying to explain to her. And I'm like, you're annoying me because you're doing it worse than I can do it.
Yeah.
So just like, just keep it to yourself. Like it doesn't, it's not interesting to me that you, oh, you're going to try to like very lamely talk shit about the Sixers. No. I've been doing that my entire life.
Yeah. It's like neutering myself right away. Like I met my coworker's husband yesterday and he's a Warriors fan. And he was like, oh, I heard you're a Sixers fan. I'm sorry. And I'm like, appropriate thing to say.
Yes.
Not offended. Why would I be offended by that?
100%. You have no idea what we go through.
You have no idea. Sorry is like the exact right thing to say. Condolences.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Actually, you know what? After the Knicks series, I did get a lot of condolences from people. And I was like, you know what? You don't need to do that because that wasn't within the top like 25 most disappointing Sixers defeats.
Sure.
Like that was one of those where I went, they actually fought pretty well. And like that series was awesome and the games were awesome. And like I could rattle off a zillion other times where I was like, oh man, what a kick to the nuts that one was. That wasn't it. I mean, that was just like,
yeah,
you know, a lot of things didn't break and it's fine.
Cause Spike felt the same way. And especially after the game, I was, you know,
pretty despondent.
I'm feeling it. We don't get time to breathe. You know, I'm setting up the podcast, fucking cursing CJ as I'm setting this thing up. So I have to go right into it. And
why are you cursing poor CJ?
Cause he's here. Cause I curse anyone. Fuck CJ after a loss like that. No, I love CJ, you know,
I can imagine because I watched one basketball game with you in my life.
Yeah.
Years ago when I moved to LA.
Yeah, Alyssa brings this up.
I think it was a Celtics game and I'll never do it again.
I know. Alyssa brings this up where other people will be like, should we watch a playoff game together? We almost watched one with Tony and Taylor down in San Diego.
Yeah.
At the hotel. And Alyssa was like, do you remember that time that you watched that game with John? I don't know.
It was a regular season game too, I'm pretty sure.
I think it was playoffs. I think it was playoffs. Giving myself
a little
more credit.
It's not happening again.
Oh man, no. That's why we're never going to do a live broadcast of me because I would end my career. I would end several relationships. Like it would never. I can't be held liable for things I say during a game, during a Sixers playoff game at least. But the question I was going to ask was because Spike feels the same way as you about they didn't embarrass themselves. Like comparatively to the last 4 years of meltdowns, a pretty good showing. Is that like the most loser shit thing in the world though? Like we are 7 playoffs into Joel's career and losing in the first round to a team. Obviously there's a lot of reasons and excuses that the Sixers lost and it was obviously a close series, but to go, well, wasn't as bad as the prior collapses. Good job, guys. Is that just like massively losery?
I guess there's an element of that, but I also think about sports a little differently. Like there's components like, all right, so last year we were in Arizona for the Phillies collapse against the Diamondbacks. Like that was a disappointing defeat because that's a team that you should beat. The Knicks are really good. And like that series was so hard fought. And there's an, you know, because I cover the entirety of the NBA and I love basketball so much, there is part of me that can be dispassionate about it and just go, man, that was just so like, that was an awesome series. So that definitely helps. And then there's also a component of me that I think a lot about, not to bring it back to our Lord and Savior, Sam Hinkie, but I think a lot about, conversations that I had with him about watching basketball and like, you know, a couple of times I had said to him, hey, let's watch a game together. And he's like, I don't know that I'd be the greatest person to watch it with because I'm not so focused on like he's sort of like the anti you, right? Where he can just like look at it and go, okay, well the shot didn't fall, but like, did they get a good shot or not? And he's like sort of dispassionate about it. So yeah, I hear what you're saying about like the loser shit, but I don't know. It was a good series, and like I can just step back from it and go, there's been way worse moments. And because we've lived through so many of them, I think that really like changes my perspective.
Yeah, you have definitely a healthier outlook. I think you covering the NBA broadly and being like, I just want a good series sometimes. And it would be nice if the Sixers won. Whereas I'm like choking the life out of any given experience.
But how have you not been? How have you not been? And you know, part of me is sort of envious of it. But how have you not been like, after all these years of just consuming Philadelphia sports and them choking us, choking the life out of us on in every possible way, with a few exceptions, obviously the Phillies in 08 and the Eagles. But like disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. How are you not desensitized?
Such a good question. I think that's the fundamental question from at least my side of the podcast is how is he still acting like this is the ultimate.
No, because I want them to achieve too, right? Like despite the fact that I am ostensibly a professional journalist, mm-hmm. there's still the part of me, the Philadelphian in me that can't get past like me wanting the teams that I grew up with and covered and my family and friends. I want good things for us.
Yeah.
However, we very rarely get good things. So while I am disappointed, then I have a beer and I'm like, all right, this is how it goes in Philly.
Well, that's how I feel that way about the Eagles. I feel like I very quickly get over an Eagles loss or even during, you know, last year was disgusting and I won some money betting against them because they were obviously so bad. And the Phils like were bad for so long after that beautiful run. And now it's like fun still for the Phils. Like I wasn't, against Houston, even though it happened, the World Series, the loss happened at my bachelor party, which was a bummer. Yeah. And then the run last year, the first time I felt like really despondent about the Phils was after that Diamondbacks loss, because it was A, to a worse team, and B, like right in front of them.
And you were there.
And well, I wasn't there. I was there for games 4 and 5. So
no, I know. I
mean, went 1-1. You were there for game 3, weren't you?
I was there for all three in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were 1 and 2. You almost didn't come to game 5 because you were the kiss of death.
I was never going to do that. That's loser shit. Anybody, all these idiots who were coming for me, what are you doing? I'm out on the fucking front lines. I went to Arizona to watch all that shit up close. And they're like, oh, you shouldn't go. Shut up.
Well, where are you? I don't know that you can square them both. That you were talking about before, about how it's completely, how do you not get desensitized? This is what they do. They hurt us. You believe in some sort of mystical part of it that we are destined for this sort of torture. Mm-hmm. And yet you feel like you yourself don't play any part in that.
No, I'm a little superstitious every now and again.
Yeah.
But do I think that I have, we've discussed this. This is insane.
Well, because you're upset that I didn't come to the Super Bowl.
This is insane behavior by you. Like the idea that you, Mike Levin, are somehow an influence on Philadelphia sports that have been an absolutely soul crushing, experience for the entirety of both of our lives, that you are the influence on that and not the other way around, that they aren't just like the drag on you.
Well, it's certainly insane. Both. Certainly at least both.
So I'm sure that you've told this story, but since I am appearing on the pod, I will tell the story. We had tickets to the Super Bowl and we had two extra tickets.
In Phoenix, Eagles Chiefs.
Yes, the last Super Bowl. And you have family in Phoenix, and we called you and Alyssa and we said, we have two extra tickets and you guys should come. And you said, awesome. And you drove through the night and you came to the Super Bowl and you sent your wife and your sister, and you said that you didn't want to go. And I was like, I don't understand this at all. And your whole bit was that if they win, you're going to be happy. And if they lose, then you won't have been there. And
that's right.
That's madness to me.
It sounds even more logical out of your mouth. The way you summed it up was like, I'm like, yeah, I'm with you. That sounds great. Because the idea of being at a Super Bowl at like a corporate bullshit event where with like half the other team's fans and having to like trudge out of that parking lot, which was a nightmare, by the way. I picked Alyssa up from there.
I'm still leaving there.
Yeah, for real. And like suffer through the loss and that fucking play at the end of the game, the penalty would have been just an absolute nightmare. So the fact that I got to watch it with my nephews and my brother-in-law and have a lovely time and scream my head off and not have to worry about getting into a fight with like an annoying fan next to me or whatever was ideal. And if they won, it would have been a beautiful memory, and you would have been there, and my sister and Alyssa would have been there, and it would have been so fun. But yeah, I so made the right decision, and they lost. I didn't think me coming made them would go like, oh, they're going to lose. I just think the threat of me being there for a Super Bowl loss would have been too much to bear. I think. But anyway, the thing I was going to get to is that I can be more of a human being around the Phillies and the Eagles because they've done it before, because they won in 08, because they won in 18. I can feel like, you know, you can't win every year. There's 30 or whatever other teams. And the fact that the Eagles have had such a good run so many times is cool. The fact that the Phils are back in like consistent contender, have beaten the Braves as much as they have in the playoffs, is awesome. The Sixers, who I don't know if you know this, I do a long running podcast about, have just never fucking done it for me, man. They've never done it. And I don't know if, like, you know, I've compared it to like Gollum at the end of Lord of the Rings several times of when it happens, but if it ever happens, then the weight that is lifted will fundamentally change my personality in a way. And even it happens, whether that's championship or even getting to a championship or a fucking conference finals, for God's sakes, or just simply beating a good team in a 7-game series. I don't know what I'm gonna be like after that, because I've put more of myself into being a public Sixers fan than anyone ever should.
It's,
and so that's it. Let me do an ad read, and then we can keep talking about this. This is good stuff, John. The rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by Draft. No, not yet. Briggs Auction. Briggs Auction. We love Briggs Auction. We're going to get CJ in for us in a second. Pop in, Siege. 4-generation family-owned and operated auction house in Garnet Valley, Pennsylvania. They also have a great hat that Alyssa has stolen from me and now wears instead of me, which is kind of a bummer. They got a ton of auctions, bi-weekly online discovery auctions. We got fine arts, jewelry, silver, fun stuff like that, and then like furnishings and shirts and all sorts of stuff. Fine art, modern design, antiques, all, but it's weird. There's a bunch of weird stuff and people like weird stuff. And I always feel like when my friends say, oh, I got this at like a vintage or thrifting or something like that, or like an auction, I'll go like, how do you do that? Briggs Auction is how you do that. Pickup is easy by appointment Saturdays or Saturday open pickup. They don't ship in-house, but work with many trusted shippers if they live out of your area or you can't pick up, etc. Also, they handle local estates, downsizing clients. If you have something to sell, they can handle it. Email inquiries to info@briggsauction.com. CJ, talk to me about the item of the week. You're wearing the hat that Alyssa has stolen from me.
I'm wearing the hat. This is a great hat for sure. One of the better hats in my arsenal. We have a lot of vintage t-shirts on this discovery lot.
Let's go.
But I'm going to focus on this 1970s Levi's men's jean jacket.
Shit.
This is the real deal.
I need exactly this. This is actually exactly what I need and is missing. If someone would win this auction and give it to me, that would be great.
But just to show the other vintage shirts as well, there are multiple lots of shirts just like this. Oh, that's nice. It's like 25, 30 shirts. We got a Live Aid shirt.
That's sick.
From 85.
John, you would wear these. I had that Phillies 08 shirt.
Do you still have it?
Yeah. No, I think actually it might be in a drawer in my parents' house.
Okay, because I also have 08 Phillies merch that I definitely do not have anymore. Yeah. So this is pulling something in me that makes me want to reconnect with those lost items of merchandise.
That's very nice. Oh, I saw a Tasty Cake one in there. That's good. John, you're a graphic tease guy.
I am a graphic tease guy. I'm very selective about them, but these are sweet. The Tasty Cakes one especially.
Yeah, real nice. Briggs Auction. Check it out. So
you're really good at this.
No one comes to hear me host. I'm the other guy. I like being the other guy.
You're amazing. Go ahead.
So we were talking about how why we still do it.
Why you are the way that you are.
Why I am this way. And I just think that as far as like desensitizing goes, there is a sickness in thinking every off season that, and I kind of didn't do it last off season, but in letting enough time go by after a big playoff loss, and thinking like, okay, now they're going to retool and re-up and it's going to be this year. And so it's the expectations that the Sixers put upon themselves with obviously having one of the best players in the league and now one of the best rising stars in the league. And then my innate dumbass ability to believe that something has to be different. And the fact that they've lost in so many heartbreaking ways and in so many embarrassing ways it gets a little bit to the shirt that I also had in 08, when the Phillies made the run, the Why Can't Us shirt. And Why Can't Us was a quote from an interviewing fans around the city who had a fan who had particularly iconic bad grammar. And it was like kind of a fun, like, why can't us? Like, why can't we do it? And for the Sixers, I'm like, why can't we do it? Why can't us? Like in a very me to God type of way. Why can't us, God? And so it just feels like, man, it keeps not being their year where they make even the makings of a run that until they do that or like stop making the playoffs entirely, I'm stuck in this. Every year could be the year, and every year it isn't.
Every year it isn't. I mean, you know, I'm older than you. Spike and I are the same age. But, you know, going back to, you know, I was technically alive when they won the championship in 83, but I don't remember that.
Technically yet. Alive. You're technically alive right now.
Technically alive. Like the Iverson run in 01 was amazing. I was very much alive for that. And like, never really thought, even after game one, never really thought they were going to beat the Lakers, but that was so fun. And that was, hey, what could be, right? Allen Iverson is this like hyper dynamic MVP. We're going to live forever. Right. But of course that was it. That was the high watermark. And since then there have been no high watermarks. Like that, there has been no real, you know, I was in the building for the four bounce Kawhi Leonard shot. I covered that game.
Yeah. You were also in my apartment when the pick swapped.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like that goes down and you're just like, okay. I mean, when, if ever, and the answer is so far, never, you know, and it sucks, man. I mean, like I covered almost every single home game during the process, like the early process, like the bad ones, like the games where like there's people on the team that you'd like. Brett Brown used to make the joke about how he'd meet somebody, shake his hand and say, you're in the lineup tonight. All those games when the buildings are empty and he's calling teaching timeouts down 20 with 7 seconds left, like those games, like just dark, dark times.
Those timeouts were nice.
You know, the answer is, I don't know, man. The answer is the hope does not spring eternal with this team.
Yeah, I don't know. This is something more for me in therapy, but I don't know the answer to that. My glutton for punishment and resilience to fuckery is unending.
Can I ask you a question?
Because I'm not pretending. That's the thing. That's the thing. And that's why it was like kind of annoying to me that Spike kept saying it was the year. And then after they lost, was like, I was just saying it. Like, I was kind of like, I was just doing that. And I was like, I'm not lying on here. Like, I think I am here like fully being for better and oftentimes for way worse, my truest self. I'm not pretending really in any way. And that's when people say like, this is a swerve, but I've had this on my notes for a while. You watch some reality shows. You don't watch Vanderpump, but you watch Below Deck. But people on reality shows all the time will go like, you don't know me, man. Like, you don't know me at all. You don't know the real me. Like, public people will say that. And I'm like, yes, you do. Like, yes, you do. Yes, you do. With them, you do. And with me, you definitely do. Like, this is who I am and how I am. Like, you know me. If you listen to this podcast long enough, like, of course, there's parts of me you don't know. Sure. There's thoughts that I have that I don't share on the podcast. Of course. But, like, pretty much, this is it. This is who I am.
That's a pretty, considering that I think I know you pretty well, I think it's a pretty accurate reflection of
thank you.
What we get on the podcast. I'm curious though, do you talk about your unhinged maniac behavior related to this sports team in therapy?
I have. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't really cracked that case, have you?
I haven't cracked it. Science, our nation's therapists are failing. I wanted to ask this happens across the board for me. In every after a Philadelphia team loses in the playoffs, I will need like a round off. Like I pretty much never watch the round immediately following a Philadelphia playoff loss, and then I'll come back for the one after that. And my buddy who's a Braves fan said he has not been watching the Phils in the NLCS, which was satisfying to hear. I have liked that. I like beating the Braves. Has watching, so I haven't watched a ton of the Eastern Conference semis. Has watching the teams that are still fortunate enough to be playing told you anything about the Sixers? Have you learned anything about what the Sixers need to do or what their failings were watching the current playoffs?
I mean, I don't have that luxury, obviously, because I cover the NBA and we do a daily show. So I'm like, I'm constantly plugged in. I'm like always watching basketball. I watched obviously last night and then had work for CBS afterwards. What it tells me is that the Sixers remain pretty far away, especially like when compared to the Western Conference. Like those teams are all in a knife fight. And they're all really good. And any team that comes out of the West is going to have been really battle tested, will have really proved themselves worthy. And even the teams that don't are like all four of those teams in the Western Conference are championship caliber. It depends on the day when you ask me about the Celtics, because the Celtics were so good this season. And yet there's like quite clearly cracks on that team. And we could get into it if you really want to, but with respect to the team that the Sixers lost to, the Knicks, you know, I thought that series was really hard fought. And the difference, I think, between the Knicks and the Sixers, and you could use this year's Sixers team or really the Sixers in general, is that the Knicks this season have overcome things and have closed games, right? Like look, that sucked to lose. And it's especially sucked to lose to Knicks fans who are just insufferable. But that team, like all the knocks that they've had, all the injuries that they've had, and it's just like, you know, Josh Hart was playing with like half a lung last night. Like, you know, like they just keep rolling them out there. And yeah, they lost last night, but you know, we'll see what happens in game 7. I don't remember a Sixers team where I was like, oh, it's going to be all right. They'll figure it out. Like, when was the last Sixers team that did that?
We were hoping that Nick Nurse would be the sort of more like wizard type pulling the strings to maniacally figure something out. And that's one of the disappointments in the Knicks series, was that it didn't feel like he didn't push us over the top. And it's not, you know, there's only so much you can do. It's not, of course, it's not fully on him, but it's one of the problems with this team that he couldn't solve. Was the rebounding issues, from a personnel standpoint, the lack of big wing athleticism and, you know, continuing to play Tobias major minutes as he, for the most part, really, really let them down and not trying that many other things.
The Tobias thing, I think, was his biggest failing. Like the rebounding component, the Knicks are just monsters, with the exception of last night, despite the fact that they're all like, every one of them except for Hartenstein is like 6'4". They're really good on the glass.
Yeah.
So I think that's more of like a roster construction failure.
For sure.
But the Tobias thing, yeah. I mean, like everybody everywhere watched that and was like, enough.
Yeah, I mean, but the Tobias thing is just like three different coaches, 6 years here, and not able, nobody having any other plan other than like play him and cross your fingers.
You know, it's a shame for a lot of reasons. You know, I don't begrudge him the money because, you know, they offered him the money. Who's not going to take the money?
Sure.
But I don't know how much time you've spent with him. I've gotten to interview him a fair amount, both when he was out here with the Clippers and then with the Sixers. He's a really nice dude.
Yeah.
It was
on the podcast. Lovely man.
Yeah. As a human being, great dude. And it sucks that like everybody can't wait for him to go to Detroit or Orlando or wherever he's going to wash up. It sucks. And he, you know what? The other thing is, when Doc had him out here after they detonated Lob City with the Clippers, that was like one of Doc's best coaching jobs. And that was probably hit. Not probably. That was his best season Tobias's of his career. He was awesome.
And the best version of that, they had like a couple other players and he was younger, obviously, but like, yeah. that's an 8 seed.
Yeah.
Like he's just, yeah. Michael Connor's article about him where he's like, he's just always underqualified to do the job you need him to as like a spacer, as a defender, as a first option, as a fourth option. He is just never qualified to do that at a higher level, at the high level that the Sixers are asking him to be. The thing that I look at with the way that Minnesota guards, the way that the Knicks play, even some of the guys on the Pacers, Aaron Nesmith and stuff, like I just need way higher percentage of guys around Maxey and Embiid that are just like bloodthirsty athletes.
Effort,
like hungry, maniacal. I loved Nikhil Alexander Walker coming out of the draft and he had a rough start.
He's your kind of guy.
He's my kind of guy, man. And he had a rough start to his career and he didn't quite figure it out. And it's like slowly started to become a better shooter. And then he wasn't that kind of defender in college. He wasn't that kind of defender his first few years in the league. And he has become that. And I think the system in Minnesota has encouraged him to be that. And it just would be so nice around Joel to have these, you know, the closest they came was that Toronto series when it was Jimmy and Ben and, you know, Tobias and stuff, but mostly Jimmy and Ben around and B just being like, we are bigger, faster, stronger than you. And that almost gave Toronto the hardest time. And that obviously made the Sixers go like, we just need to be big. And then it was Horford and Josh Richardson at point guard, which was a mistake as we remember. But like, it'd be so nice to have team identity guys, like a real, like, this is what we do. These are the kinds of players on this team. They're big, they're athletic. They get to balls faster than you. They wear you down over time. They get to the rim. They crash the glass. Like, it would be very helpful to have the kinds of relentless high motor athletes that can also hit shots. I mean, like, I'm naming like platonic ideals of basketball players, but it's so frustrating watching over and over again for years the Sixers not be the team that gets the loose balls, not get the 50-50 balls, not make the play of like the ball's right there, but somebody is a little bit more physical. Obviously Tobias, but it wasn't just Tobias. Like it would be, you got Embiid, you got Maxey. Maxey's very fast, but obviously not that big, not that strong. Embiid is never going to be especially at this point in his career with all the injuries, he's never going to be I'm going to be the first to every basketball. He'll make a couple like diving plays. He'll put his body on the line, all that stuff. But he's just not quick enough at that size with those injuries to be like explosive to get it. And I would love the three other guys in that starting lineup, the six other guys in that rotation to all be like man to man, like we get to everything. We wear you down. And having those that you have, the hard part is Embiid and Maxey. That's the hard part. You got them. They're here.
Is it I think with Maxey, yes, because of where they took him, and Embiid maybe a little less so just because, you know, absent injuries, he was pretty easy to identify as a guy that was going to be very good at basketball. The guys that you're talking about, though, like, because I'm with you. Nikhil Alexander-Walker has been awesome this postseason and has really acquitted himself. And I love the way that the Wolves play. I was really high on them all season long, especially, you know, on the podcast that I do, Beyond the Arc, available wherever you get your favorite shows. Please download, subscribe, and leave a review. The other two people were busting my chops all season long about the Wolves and were like, they're not for real. I'm like, they're really for real. They're really good. That, like, even Ant Edwards, right, is a guy who is a superstar, but plays like what you're talking about. Anyway, my whole point here is that Nikhil Alexander-Walker, two teams with smart executives gave up on him. Pelicans with David Griffin, and then the Jazz with Danny Ainge. And Tim Connelly, who built both the Nuggets and now the Wolves, kind of lucked into him. So, like, I don't know how easy those guys are to identify. Sometimes they just pop. Like, it took a second for... This is the best season in Nikhil Alexander-Walker's career. And you're talking about surrounding Maxey and Embiid with six of those dudes. Like, where are they?
Yeah. Going to commercial number two, John. The Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. We love our dog. I love John's dog, who is probably just off screen laying down.
He's around here somewhere.
Shout out Dasher. And you got to take care of him. And think about how you would feel if you slept on a hard floor. And now think about the difference if you slept in a good bed. Every day, you're going to make your dog sleep on that floor? No. Cheap dog beds, they're flimsy, they're not real beds. You need the Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. They're thick, they're powerful, they got that dog in them. The bed has the dog in them and then on them. As dog gets older, especially big dogs, they get arthritis. Sleeping on those bad beds, it's not good for them. You want to go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. Get your Big Barker, get the free Ricky upgrade, two process pup patches that can be ironed on the bed wherever you'd like. It really does keep your dog's joints healthier for longer. A study by PennVet showed that the Big Barker helps your dog feel better as they get older. They come in all different colors, configurations, engineered by experts to keep dogs youthful for longer. Right now, go to the link in the show notes. CJ's going to put it in there to get a Big Barker with a special limited edition Rebel shirt. I got to get a dog so I can compete with all this Rebel merch we've been doing. First come, first serve. Must go to the link in the description of the pod. 10-year warranty. Phone won't flatten. They replace it for free. 365-day at-home trial. Try it for a full year. If you don't like it, your dog doesn't like it, they'll pay for UPS to bring it back for a full refund. Handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. John, you got to bark.
Brr.
That's great. Really good. Really good.
I was anticipating you saying that, and I wasn't ready. I did call Dasher in while you were reading.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Tell him I said hi. So the question that this opens the door to is the free agency question.
I was wondering if you were gonna ask.
The cap space question.
Yeah.
The easiest one. The easiest guy is just telling Paul George, we'll give you the max contract. We value you more than the Clippers do. Here's a max contract for however many years you want. Come to Philadelphia, be the third guy between these two other guys, and they have to trade nothing for that. Where are you at on Paul George right now?
Huge. Number one with a bullet on my list for all the reasons that you just mentioned.
Okay,
I think like there are any number of other players that you might be able to slot in there, but I think he's the perfect fit for Philly because you don't have to trade anything, because as a third guy, what a massive, like unbelievable, like hard to calculate upgrade that would be over Tobias Harris on both ends of the floor. He's such a good defender. He just had his best 3-point shooting season of his career, and he's been healthy, and you don't have to worry about him. Like every now and again, he'll say something that's like a little stupid. You know, he might say something like, I miss LA, and people in Philly will go, yeah, he doesn't like Philly. No, I mean, like that's like the worst that would happen with Paul George. Like it's not like a Jimmy Butler situation where Jimmy Butler's going to come in and be an oxygen thief. And like, he's going to command all this attention. It's just, Paul George goes about his business and is really good at basketball. And, you know, there's a little bit of age concern there.
Yeah.
And there's some injury history.
Yeah. But
from what he does when he's available, sign me up, please and thank you. The problem is, you know, he hasn't signed the extension in LA because they haven't offered him the max and they want him to take the Kawhi deal because Kawhi took a little bit less than the max.
Yep.
But I think eventually Ballmer's going to come around to it because, as you and I know, because we live here, they're building that new building and it's going to open next year. And Kawhi is Kawhi and is only intermittently available. And then the other guy, James Harden, we just saw another vanishing act in the postseason. Like, they got to put a team together to get people into this building. And I think eventually Ballmer's going to offer him the money.
How do you think Kawhi would feel about that?
I mean, he already, who knows what Kawhi feels about anything? The guy is like, he's unknowable.
That's potentially bad blood for a guy that, if you're saying, hey, we're going to sign you to just sub the max and we're not going to sign anybody over that, then,
well,
and they go and turn around and go like, we gave it to Paul.
Kawhi strikes me as a guy who, you know, if he wants to try to, he wanted Paul George to come in the first place. So if he wants to continue this experiment that hasn't worked, but if he wants to, then he strikes me as the type of guy that would be like, all right, whatever, I'm already rich. What's the big deal if he gets, like, you know, a small percentage more than I already got?
I think people have a little more feelings than you might be giving them credit for. If already rich is the baseline there. Everybody in the NBA, they got it. I don't know. I also think that the Clippers could decide that they don't feel like Paul George at that stage of his career is worth the max contract. They could feel like this experiment hasn't worked. We have been bad enough. Paul George is supposed to be sort of the high level glue that keeps all this together. And I don't know that it's necessarily his fault that it hasn't worked, but a lot of Clippers fans are very low on Paul George and happy to see him leave. Does that give you any pause? I'm on the fence on Paul George. I think, like, as far as ease goes, not having to put any picks there, not having to package anything together or do like a weird sign and trade. There's only three guys on the roster that are cost controlled, and it's Embiid and Maxey, who you're not trading, and Ricky Council, who I love.
I know you do.
But don't think can be the centerpiece of a superstar deal just yet. And so you got to do a lot of figuring things out with picks and all to get the guys that they need to get. The Paul George one is so easy. Obviously, you know, LeBron could opt out and come here. Spike wrote in the newsletter his case against LeBron, which is not surprising. Spike has been very anti-LeBron for a long time. DeMar DeRozan, another guy that could just come here, but has said he loves Chicago and wants to stay there for unfinished business. Buddy seemed like a nice guy. That business is going to stay unfinished.
Yeah.
So at a certain point, you can't keep calling it your unfinished basement. It's just your basement. It's straight up just what it is. That's what it's going to be. Or, you know, OG Anunoby or Siakam if they don't sign with their respective teams, but it looks like they will. So those are your, like, as far as like big options of guys who could just walk in here. That's it. Paul George out of those certainly makes the most sense, the easiest amount of sense, the shooting, the defense, the secondary creation, like a classic five tool baseball type of basketball player. But the mindset is one that Clippers fans point out, and that Alyssa, my wife, who you are also friends with, is imploring me to not believe that Paul George is going to make the difference. She is so certain that he is a loser.
With respect to your lovely wife, who I love, I disagree. Just from a numbers perspective, Paul George is awesome. He's really good at basketball, and he, even when his shot isn't falling, and again, he just had his best season from three this year at 34, just turned 34. His defensive effort is awesome. He can switch one through five in a pinch. I mean, I don't know what we're talking. Like, all the guys, let's just go through the guys that you rattled off. LeBron is LeBron and he's amazing. But the minute that you bring him in, it becomes LeBron. Everything's about LeBron. No, thank you. I love him. He's fantastic. I don't care where you put him in the GOAT conversation between one or two. He's absolutely a generational talent. I just don't think it would make sense. DeMar DeRozan, he's fine. DeMar DeRozan is fine. And if that's the best you could do, okay. Pascal Siakam's not going anywhere. He's resigning in Indy. And then OG's probably not going anywhere. And even if he was, I love OG, but he's got massive injury issues, right? Four of the last five seasons, he's failed to play more than 50 games. The Sixers already have one of those guys. You need somebody, you know, and Paul George has had his injury issues too. But I think he was durable this season. He really acquitted himself well. Yeah, played, and again, there's not going to be... Yeah, and there's not going to be any of that like off-court nonsense. Like he's just going to come in and be like, "Oh, you need me to guard the other team's best offensive wing option? No problem. Oh, you need me to put the ball on the floor or shoot the three? No problem. Oh, I'm not the first guy or the second guy? No problem." Like I just think it makes so much sense. The reservation for me is that the Clippers have this stupid building that's happening, and if it was from like a completely dispassionate If they weren't opening this building next year, they should hit the detonation button and reboot that thing. Hands down. Like that thing needs to be blown up and start over. But they're not going to do that because they got a brand new building and they've got a fan section that they're trying to fill 50 something rows of Clippers fans. And if they fill one row, it'll be amazing. But Ballmer's going to throw money. I'd be shocked if they could pull it off. Maybe Morey can. Maybe he can't.
Yeah, dude, it concerns me that the age thing and the fact that, you know, some of the, you look at Paul George's stats and its context, right? And it's like the ball was in his hands less. Harden had the ball a lot when Kawhi's there. Kawhi's had the ball a lot. The fewest free throws per game and per 36 in Paul George's career since his third year in the league. Gets the line less. Gets the basket less. A little bit slowed down first step, settles for a lot of jumpers. Now, he did shoot 41% from three, highest of his career, and also highest percentage from two since he was a rookie. Not as many attempts as normal, but guy doesn't tend to take terrible shots. Just seems to settle a little bit for ones that are maybe a little less efficient or a little less demonstrative. But as you said, that's he'd be the third guy, and it's easier to critique that. Now he's also the third guy in LA, the way that they play with those two guys, because the other two have the ball in their hands so much. But the third guy-ness in between Maxey and Embiid makes so much more sense than it does between Harden and Kawhi at the stages of their career. I'm In a sea of imperfect options, Paul George is the one that is closest to perfect. He can ease into the part of his career where he can do less. His usage rate has gone down three straight seasons. His assist rate has gone down three straight seasons. He's going to be like but as his true shooting percentage has gone up three straight seasons. So it's like he's easing more into an off-ball threat. If you do that, I need those other two guys in the starting lineup who play major minutes to be, whether it's a healthy D'Anthony Melton or somebody else, to be like big physical energy tone setting, like high motor guys, because Paul is big. Paul is good. He's going to make plays, but he's also not going to set the tone in a way that brushes the other team back. And that is my concern in the Knicks series is seeing another guy who's like a little bit passive, a little bit lacking in dog, lacking in boat. It would be nice to have that. So it's that's the kind of thing that you got to go again on Daryl to find diamonds in the rough. You know, Kelly Oubre worked out.
Yeah, he did.
Getting Oubre for the minimum is one of the best free agent signings of my lifetime for the Sixers.
He was awesome.
And you got to be right again. They're not going to, especially if they give Paul the max, they're not going to have enough space to go sign a bunch of different guys. You're going to have to hit at the medium guys, whether it's your mid-level, whether it's your like 10 million or whatever, you're going to have to hit that and also hit at your minimums. And I really would love them to keep the pick. I know that this is me and everyone that is not a draft guy, the way I am, will go, you're winning now. Like, what is the point? Like, just you need a guy. But this this isn't a great draft. So if you trade a pick for, you're not going to get that much return for the pick because of the let's say low upside value of this draft. But there's a lot of guys, 22, 23 years old, who are ready to contribute right now. The term plug and play is being used a lot in mock drafts for guys that the Sixers are looking at. We'll talk about it as it gets closer. But there's only so much value you can get out of signing guys to minimums, signing guys to like a small mid-level when they're in their, you know, end of their prime or whatever. The way to get massive value is to hit on picks in the draft that you then have under team control for 4 years. And then either you can use them as a trade piece because they all of a sudden are popping and you can make somebody believe that this guy could be the centerpiece of a trade to get an older player in there. Or like what happened with Maxey, man, like that this franchise was saved by Tyrese Maxey being as good as he was and continuing to get better.
Saved might be a bit much, but it was amazing.
I think saved. I really do think saved. I think Embiid would have asked out by now if Maxey hadn't come. I feel like we would be in the nightmare scenario. The fact that Mike Muscala hit that shot in the bubble and the pick conveyed and Maxey got to come here and has improved and been as good as he is, and he's going to get a 5-year max this offseason. It's going to be beautiful. It's wonderful. Well also, deserved. Tyrese Maxey Sportsmanship Award. My take on Maxey winning the Sportsmanship Award is there should be whatever the opposite of the Sportsmanship Award next year, and I want Maxey to win that. You can't be too nice on the court. I don't want guys nice that he does stuff outside the court, nice that he smiles afterwards, but I want him to like lead the league in technical fouls next year. Like I want some flips, like give me good boy, give me bad boy. Like I want to see the dichotomy within him.
You want a total heel turn.
Absolutely. I think
how unlikely that would be.
That would be fun. He did start complaining a lot more about the refs because he fucking wasn't getting those calls, man. But yes, congratulations to Maxey on the Sportsmanship Award. What a sweet guy. Everybody loves him. I think he's ready to continue taking a bigger role in the offense. It was good for him to sort of suffer through the ups and downs of carrying a team as a number one option with Joel out for as long as he was. And he succeeded at times and he failed at times. It'll obviously be easier for him to do that if there's a Paul George type and a healthy Embiid around him. I've become like team identity, play with an edge type of guy. I've become pilled with that. And Paul George is another bet on a Daryl type bet on high upside stars, even with flawed makeup or age or something like that.
What I am, you know, what I'm concerned about, because I do think on paper, Paul George is a perfect fit.
Yeah, absolutely. On paper, he is undoubtedly the perfect fit. You cannot craft a better person to drop right in between them.
What I am concerned about is what happens if they don't get him, right? Like if he stays in LA, because that free agent list gets real thin real fast. Yep. And this is already going to be a really, like, it's a difficult rebuild and a difficult offseason. Yes, this is what Daryl gets all the money for. And I think he's like one of the smartest people I've ever interacted with. And like, you know, he's been one of the best. No, he hasn't won a championship, but it's really, really, really difficult to win a championship. He is universally regarded as one of the best general managers in the NBA for a reason. But this was already going to be a really difficult rebuild. Gets a little less difficult if you can slot in Paul George. If you don't get Paul George, then all of a sudden it's like, oh man, he has more than his work cut out for him. And like, what does he do? Like, Daryl is going to have to invent a whole new team, and he's going to have to do it not by just plucking one guy off the free agent list, but by interacting with these different clubs and moving guys around and like doing a little hocus pocus magic stuff. And like, I don't know, that becomes a much, much more difficult prospect. Yeah, you got those two main pieces, and that is hugely helpful. But beyond that, you've got to construct a whole new roster. It's hard.
It's hard to rebuild the ship every offseason.
While you're still sailing it. I know you guys love the ship of Theseus, but Jesus.
Yeah, for real. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, official betting partner of the NBA. New customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Deposit $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. I love DraftKings. I love playing. I cannot do it in California, unfortunately, so I'm going to Phoenix in a little bit for my nephew's graduation, and I'll be putting in some futures bets. I like the futures. I prefer the futures. I think I get a little bit too worked up to do the same game parlay. But if you don't get too worked up to do a same game parlay, then they have plenty of those. I love a future. I love a baseball future. I had a little piece of the Mariners last year, John. That was fun. That was fun for me. I love a divisional record. That's how I won my Orlando Magic bet. They edged the Heat by a game or two, and that's how I won my Tampa Bay Buccaneers NFC South bet.
Wow.
So I'm really cornering the market on divisional regular season standings bet. Thanks to DraftKings when I'm not in California. Use code RTRS for a no sweat first bet up to $1,500. If your first bet doesn't hit, only at DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Must be 21. See show notes for details. I also wanted to give a happy birthday. We got an email this morning. Spike, CJ, and I got an email this morning from someone wanting to wish her father, who is a longtime listener, Andrew Kennis, a happy birthday from your daughter, Hazel, who reached out to us. Apparently, you're a great dad and have tremendous taste in podcasts. Happy birthday to
Andrew. Happy birthday.
Oh, John. So who of the guys that are expiring would you prioritize to bring back? You can bring back two of all the guys on the Sixers. Obviously, Tobias would not be an option.
I mean, Oubre.
Okay.
For sure. I mean, that's a guy that's top of the list. Now you're gonna have to pay him more.
Yep.
He's definitely due for a raise, but he fit really well. And I think he, you know, for that energy and effort component that you love so much, and also a little bit of he can get his blood up a little bit. Oubre for me. And then beyond that, like, I could take or leave pretty much everybody.
Oubre or Batum for you?
I like Batum, but I've always liked Batum. But how old is Batum now? I got to check.
I think 35.
35. Yeah. I mean, like, and he was talking about maybe retiring.
That was before Spike did the French accent though. Okay. He did some French accent work at him, and I think he convinced him.
Yeah, I like Batum. I've always liked him, and I think he's a good role player, but like in a world where you're trying to reboot this thing on the fly into a contender, how many minutes are you looking for Nick Batum off the bench? You know?
Well, he's playing like into the 30s in the playoffs.
That's what I'm saying. That's obviously way too tough much for
him. But if you can get him, and this is how I felt about Lowry also, it's like, if you can get him into like 14 to 18,
yes,
then we're talking about an ease in. He's helpful when he's there. You're not overtaxing him. The fact that he is not, obviously he amped up his shooting over the playoffs, but the fact that he's not like a dribble drive threat, really, if they do leave him open, if he is, you know, if Maxi's getting blitzed or something like that, it'd be good to have a couple of guys in the Josh Hart vein who can, oh, you're blitzing our best player, I can at least attack the basket and finish for myself or make the right pass to get a good shot to, you know, either a dunk or whatever. I wonder, we haven't talked about it too much, but I wonder if we're at the end of the B-ball road. B-ball Paul.
I thought it was interesting. Didn't Daryl mention him in the names that were in the postseason press conference and the names that would be returning, which I thought was really interesting because his contract is non-guaranteed because they got bounced. And as everybody here knows, they got bounced, and that poison pill contract wasn't one because they couldn't get out of the first round.
Yeah.
I'm laughing to
good,
keep from
good
crying.
Try, Danny Ainge. Joke's on yeah, you. We actually lost in the first round. Yeah, he's got 2 million or two years, 16 million unguaranteed. I'm not sure when that has to be guaranteed, but I bet they will wait until the last minute to give themselves as much options as possible, because they could trade him. Even if they have to trade him in a package, they could trade him to somebody that then waives him if you don't want to. But the deal is fine. $8 million for a backup center per year is completely fine. It's just a matter of.
This is hard for you.
It is hard for me. I love this. I love Bebo. I love the kind of player he is.
You always have.
I want to see a world where he plays few more minutes with Joel. And I think he proved himself capable of hitting wide open threes at a reasonable rate at the NBA level, not just G League rims. But the it's just hard to replace Joel even for little 4 minute stretches, and having somebody that at least is big and hulking the way Andre Drummond is and just can scoop up a bunch of rebounds is more appealing than having to play a totally different style with B-ball in there, who also has limitations on the offensive end and
yes,
some, you know, not an incredibly high IQ player. I think because of how he is and how he seems, maybe gets dinged for being low IQ. I don't think that that is the case.
Kind of spastic.
There's a little, yes. But that's the fun, the good and the bad is that he is.
He's all over the place.
He's weird.
He kind of reminds, he's like the basketball version of like Nuke LaLoosh from Bull Durham, where like he's just like all over the place at all times.
And like sometimes that's
to their benefit. Yeah. And you're like, nice job. Like you're out of control, but I love it. And then sometimes you're just like, oh no, you're out of control and it's terrible. I don't know. I'm with you. It might be end of the road time for him. The problem is, you know, and it's always been the problem, and you guys have talked about it forever, and I've talked about it forever, and everybody knows that it's true that they need a backup center for the Embiid minutes, especially in the postseason, somebody to like eat up 10 minutes a game, right? The problem is, look around the NBA. Who has a good backup center? Who has two guys? Like the Knicks have two guys. One of them's hurt right now. And the guy who graduated from being backup is probably going to end up as their starter, but he's actually a free agent this offseason and is going to get a ton of money, but probably wouldn't make sense for the Sixers. Then, you know, the Celtics got two guys. Who else has two guys? Like it's
Minnesota.
Okay. They've got three guys. They're the super exception to the rule. There's not a lot of that out there. So it's hard to identify if you were going to move on from Paul, who, as you mentioned, is under control. Well, could be under control for a cheap amount of money.
Yeah.
Like how are you replacing that?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. That was part of why I'm just saying things that are on brand, but like why it's such a bummer that Covington wasn't remotely healthy, because having the option to go,
what year is this?
Every year to go, like Covington, Batum, pick anybody, Oubre, as your front court in those minutes when, okay, B-ball's not working, we got to at least spread the floor, we got to at least be more options offensively, whatever. The fact that they had to go to B-ball or Mo Bamba, who was pretty atrocious all year, and they couldn't, maybe they didn't trust KJ Martin or he was hurt or whatever. Like they're just not having like one more guy to go, okay, let's go small and try to play like a completely different way and get out and run and match the Knicks' energy and wingness of everything. The fact that they couldn't go to that and they had to go to Paul, and it just was a tough matchup for him, and he didn't play well. I don't think he was the problem, but he definitely didn't play well. And he got, you know, him being the only one to get rebounds as the Knicks were just flying in around them, and you know, Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson being incredibly long. It was just tough. It was tough to see him like that, man. I didn't like it. I didn't like it for my guy. But if there's an option to move on and get somebody, whether it's somebody in the draft that you believe could step in right away, Kellel Ware of Oregon is Oregon, then Indiana, he transferred, is awesome and a big dude and can stretch the floor a little bit and protect the rim, and that could be somebody that they target at 16. I want them to keep that pick. I would prefer not to take it on a center, but if that's an option they think they could get for pretty cheap, then that would be something. I just don't think that, I think all options are on the table, including letting B-ball go somewhere else.
I was just saying, I'm just going through the free agent list right now. Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, Hartenstein is going to get paid and he's going to want starters minutes anyway. Mo Wagner, anybody? Daniel Theis?
Like, sure. Theis would be nice. I like, he's outplayed by Mason Plumlee in LA. He's fine. He's probably a little past his prime. I like Mo Wagner. He's the kind of at least like mean streak. Like we will play at a level of intensity that upsets the other team that I'm kind of looking for.
It's all the same retreads, man. There's going to be a Plumlee. There's going to be a Zeller, Alex Len. Like, okay. You know what? What about Precious?
Precious is fine. He's fine. He's a player I like, but I think
he could just play there.
Yeah. I don't know. The bummer for me as far as looking at Sixers free agents goes, and I think the how many, you know, this applies to the Paul George situation. This applies to a ton of the guys that the Sixers have expiring, is how are they going to make it all work at once? I'm sure there are many contingency plans happening in the Sixers front office right now of like, if we get this guy, if this guy closes first, if this guy, like the free agency being a non-tampering sprint of like waiting for other guys to make their decisions and losing out on guys because, you know, that happened obviously with, you know, people talk about this pretty publicly with the Rockets and Brook Lopez. They thought they were getting Brook, and at the last minute he changes his mind, or Milwaukee offers more money, he goes back to Milwaukee, and then the Rockets are sort of stuck, and their plan was undone. I think they had to trade some picks to get to what they needed. And this is the like pre-work that has to get done to make it happen. And you're depending on agents and relationships and everything to like make it all happen. And I'm worried that if they don't get Paul George, they will have already let some of these other guys on the team sign elsewhere that they wish they could have had back had they known that Paul wasn't coming or one of these other guys wasn't coming. My concern is D'Anthony Melton is such a beautiful fit on this team.
He'd be another one I'd bring back.
But I don't know what his number is going to be, because the back thing is pretty serious. He's obviously been out in and out of the lineup for a long time. He's had, you know, operations on his back. Like he's a guy that just cannot be counted on to be just reasonably healthy. And I don't know how much he's going to get on the open market. Somebody might take a chance on him, but if he comes back for like another 1 year prove it deal to stay healthy, and there's an operation he can go through to maybe get it. I mean, he's a perfect fit. You felt his absence in the playoffs so much. And for a team that has so few ways, you know, assuming that the third max contract guy comes in here, so few ways to get better, you cannot be, you know, blowing whatever, 8, 10, 15 million on a guy who you can't count on in the playoffs because his back is acting up. So that's where you got to trust. Like, he's at least here. They have his medical. If they would know better than anybody else, like if he is a guy that will, you know, you're making a bet on it, obviously could go good, could go bad, but that's the part of team building that I, at this height, when you're trying to contend, that I find to be the most difficult of going the health part of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a concern. There's a lot of things that Daryl has to juggle this offseason, and he's doing it. It's like a complete circus act, right? He's not only juggling, but he's on the high wire, and there's no net. And if they don't get Paul George and some of these other guys leave, and then all of a sudden you look around and he could very easily go splat here. I mean, like this is a, you know, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but this might be the most critical offseason of Daryl Morey's career. Like it's really difficult what he's being tasked and not what he's being tasked with, what he has tasked himself with.
Yeah.
He said this was always going to be the offseason where he had to reboot this thing on the fly. Yeah. He set it up to do that. Okay. Well, you know, teams or players don't really move anymore in free agency, not big ones. And if there's any chance of it happening, it's going to be Paul George. And then after that, you know, you're going to have to move some pieces around by interacting with other teams. Just a really, really difficult task ahead. I'm fascinated to see what he does here. I think like there's a handful of general managers that I would be like, okay, I'd trust them to at least attempt this. He would be in that group, but that doesn't mean it's easy. And it doesn't mean it's easy that he's going to pull it off.
Yeah. And to your point, like this is the bed that he made when he didn't go all in at this trade deadline.
Yeah.
With Embiid hurt, they played it safe. They didn't trade any first round picks. They didn't trade any big contracts. It was just a couple pieces that could have helped. Buddy Hield didn't work out.
No, he didn't. Where are you on Buddy Hield?
I mean, Lo, I don't think you can bring him back. I don't think that he's...
Even after the
explosion, the microwave. The game six explosion?
Yeah.
Look, it was nice to see. It was nice to see him get free, but I just think on a physical tools level, he's not big and quick enough to get a shot off against legitimate defenders. And he's not a guy who can play above the rim, and he wasn't finishing that well. And I think he's maybe a better player across the board than given credit for. At least I think the defense on Brunson was pretty nice, and I was impressed by it. And I think he improved as a passer over the last few years. But if your main thing is shooting and you can't get shots off because you're a little too slow or a little too scared to shoot contested ones or deep ones, then like, what are you doing here? So I'm interested to see where he goes, but I don't think it's happening in Philadelphia. And I think Daryl in his like postseason remarks was kind of like, yeah, didn't work out. My bad.
I understand why he thought it might, though. Like, sure. You know, given some time, some actual time with Joel, like they've been trying to find the, you know, and I'm going to whisper this because I know Spike can't stand him, but like the JJ successor, like somebody to do the coming off the screen, the dribble handoff, like jack up shots, hunting shots. Yeah. And they just haven't. And like,
well, it's Maxie. Yeah. Maxie is that guy.
He's more than that, though. He's even more than that.
Of course, but he has. Yeah. But he that's the rhythm that they have together, and that's what they like running for him, and that's why having a wing distributor who can run pick and roll and get his own offense while Maxie comes off screens and runs two man game with him, I think that would make them a lot more dynamic, because the Sixers really couldn't do anything unless Maxie had the ball in his hands. Even the moments that like campaign was in and had some on ball juice, it was like, oh my God, look at this. This guy's beating somebody off the dribble. You're allowed to do that. It was either Maxie or Oubre going right to the fucking rim, or a lot of like standing around and hoping Joel hits an incredibly tough shot or makes the pass to the corner and they get a three out of it. They need to just be a little bit more versatile as basketball players and with a high motor and hungry enough to do it, because you felt how lacking they were, unless Maxie and Embiid did everything, which they almost did. To your point, I mean, they almost did that series, a couple bounces different ways, a couple calls a different way. They get to the second round, and if they're healthy, beat this Indiana team. And that's another added to the list of fan fictions that we've had for for many seasons now.
Quite a
stocked bookshelf. John, I really appreciate you coming on this podcast and listening to me host it.
You did a great
CBS Sports. Say the name of the podcast again.
So it's the Beyond the Arc podcast.
Daily.
It is a daily Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. You can also find us on CBS Sports Network, CBS Sports HQ. But yes, Beyond the Arc, all your NBA needs. There was, during the Sixers-Knicks series, it was like 75% of the show, because we have one guy from Philly and then one gal who's a Knicks fan, and now less Sixers.
Sure. Now with less Sixers.
Please check it out.
You know him, you love him. John Gonzalez. This was the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. John, are you down with TTP?
You know, look, face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you! Time for playing B.